Like Betty here with you this morning. Thanks for your company. I'll be here till about midday. And what a day it is. A little pinch and a punch. Nice ways for the first day of the month, of course. It's May Day, and all day on 3CR Radio, we're going to be celebrating and talking to lots of mob. In particular, this hour, we've got a Black Noise Radio special coming up soon. Lara Watson is from the First Nations Workers Alliance, and we'll find out all about that from Lara very soon on the show. Coming up a little bit later on, before midday, quite a remarkable fella coming up on the program. He's a champion boxer, but also he is involved with the Plumbers Union. So we'll talk with Robbie Pedden. He'll be on the program today and talking about a new program which qualifies male and female Indigenous plumbers working in rural and remote areas across Australia. But before that, we'll check in with Lara Watson from the First Nations Workers Alliance very soon. You're tuned into a special May Day broadcast right here on 3CR. And we've been at it since early this morning, talking all things workers' rights on your radio today, because that's what we do well here at 3CR, Radical Radio. Well, time now to talk about an organisation which was established by the Australian Council of Trade Unions to provide community development program, which is a CDP, which you might have heard of, providing Aboriginal and Islander workers a collective voice to campaign for fair wages and employment conditions. And Lara Watson is from the First Nations Workers Alliance. Good morning, Lara.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, sis. So what's your role at the Workers Alliance there?
I'm the Indigenous officer at the Australian Council of Trade Unions, and I'm overseeing the work around the First Nation Workers Alliance. So I head out to remote communities and have a yarn.
You got a good job, eh?
It's been fantastic. Definitely a rewarding role.
That's it. So tell me, I know that there was CDEP in which I worked up in Cape York at one time in my life. And so it's CDP now, is that right? So it's changed, hasn't it, over the years? Yeah.
Yes, the employment component has been ripped out. So the CDP, now we have remote community workers that are doing wage jobs. For a welfare payment. So they're not getting paid any award rate.
So they get. So just hearing what you said there, they get paid a benefit money and work for their benefits, is that right?
That's correct.
Wow.
And also for the first time in history, we've got private enterprise and business can actually access CDP workers. So they can apply to have CDP workers fill roles, which are normally paid jobs. They can provide what they're calling 26 weeks of employment, where the CDP worker may get a top-up, but at the end of that 26 weeks, they're back on the community development program. There's no work cover. There's no workers' compensation if they're injured on the job.
That's not good. That's not a good thing.
No, that's not good.
No, particularly out in regional remote areas where, you know, they don't have access to a lot of services as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I received a photo and it made me fall off my chair. We've got a CDP participant operating this huge saw, no shoes, in a pair of shorts, no gloves, no safety equipment, yet the supervisor right next to him is in full safety equipment. And
I wonder if that worker would be a non-Indigenous worker wearing that full safety equipment.
Yes, he was non-Indigenous.
Fancy that.
That's right. But I guess the most appalling thing about it was this CDP worker had refused to operate the machinery without safety equipment and was then threatened with suspension and 8 weeks without payments if he didn't perform the duties.
Which is not a good thing, is it, Lara? Because, as we know, it's hard enough to get any sort of employment in a regional or remote area. So that person is then just cast out and doesn't have other employment opportunities, I would say. Yeah.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, your special today is around May Day and, you know, we look back at some of the great industrial campaigns and walk-offs that we have, like Gurindji and the Pilbara. And then you think about what's happening today and our First Nation workers are worse off.
Which is not a good thing. I'm quite shocked to hear this information from you and saddened that the CDP workers are receiving below the minimum wage for the work they perform. How can we make things better? How do you campaign to get things better for Aboriginal workers?
Well, first of all, we wait for an invitation from remote communities, and once we get that invite, we'll actually travel out and we'll have a conversation with CDP workers around what their issues and what some of the things that are happening in their space. And we'll continue to go out for visits, and then we actually, probably by the third or fourth visit that we take, we'll actually roll through training. And it's basically how to be a union delegate training. And we walk through some of the skills that you need to raise your issue in the broader community and the broader public, such as political lobbying and what you need to do to ensure that politicians are listening to you and what the issues are. We took a delegation to Canberra late last year, and they addressed the Federal Indigenous Caucus there, and they were impressive. Like, they didn't hold anything back. They laid it out on the table, and they had the Indigenous Caucus just absolutely spellbound with what they had to say. So this caucus isn't just of First Nation members of Parliament. There's also non-Indigenous parliamentary members that sit on the caucus as well. So getting that broad view within Parliament, actually listening to what's happening from people on the ground who live this. And we have great advocates now within Parliament trying to push this issue. So they're doing great work, our CDP workers, in this campaign for wage justice.
And tell us about some of the places that you venture out to in remote and regional Australia, Sis.
Yeah, so we've been quite heavy within the Northern Territory. So we've been out to places like Cannon Creek, Daly River, Santa Teresa, the camps around Alice and the Tiwi Islands. We'll be heading up to Torres Strait mid-year. We've been over to Palm Island, but we'd really love to get back there and have a bit of a yarn. We've been in contact with a lot of communities in Western Australia, so we're hoping to get a few invites come through where we can actually go along and visit the communities in person. We're in the process of trying to set up a bit of a tour through the APY lands in South Australia and NT and have a conversation with them. But we've got some great, great workers that live in these communities as well that are working and are union members. So they've been working on the ground to see what needs to be delivered for CDP workers to be able to stand up and speak out, because it's quite intimidating for them.
It is, isn't it? In particular, if you've got a white manager, a non-Indigenous manager, you might be too shame or too mild to speak out. How do you give people and workers the confidence in these remote areas to be armed with that confidence to go forth and speak about their workers' rights?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that we're extremely mindful of is that their payments are often held at ransom. So they also look at the threat of being breached and don't have any money come in for 8 weeks.
So we're talking about are we, Lara, in that case?
Yeah. So, you know,
how does that work? Yeah.
So there's a three-phase process, I suppose. So supposedly, if a CDP worker misses an activity for the first time, they get breached and lose just over $50 from their payment.
And that could happen. Yeah, that could happen if they're away on sorry business, for example, and don't turn up for their work.
Wow. Yeah. So all these breaches are being rolled out. Now, if a participant has sorry business or they've got sick kids at home that they need to care for, or perhaps there's a medical appointment that they need to travel, because a lot of these communities, you actually got to travel up to 3 days to be able to get to an appropriate medical person that you need to see. So they have to actually organise that through Centrelink, not their job service provider that's in the community. And they're being held on the phone for up to 5 hours before they even speak to anyone.
Oh my goodness. The paperwork
and the rigmarole and everything that they need to go through to get out of doing activity so that they can take care of business that's happening within the family, they're finding that they don't, either don't get through and they get breached, or it's easier for them. They're just going, I'll get breached because I need to actually go out on sorry business. I can't get through to anyone, so I'm going to get breached. We're finding that people are actually moving off the country into hub towns, so like into Darwin or into Alice Springs, so that they're put onto a different program, not the community development program. So one, they're getting starved out of their communities with being breached and not getting payments for up to 8 weeks, or they're moving off a country that they know and love to be able to get money on a different program.
Oh, it sounds incredibly complex and not too easy if you're under this scheme living in remote areas.
Yeah, and we saw with the Community Development and Employment Program where they were paid an award rate and they had work protections if they were injured on the job, there was also community control in
that
program.
That's right, yeah. That was the one that I was under up in Cape York.
Yeah.
And I had a great job working in a childcare centre 5 days a week. It was awesome. Great pay, great conditions. But that's changed now, eh?
And that's right. So we're seeing workers are doing exactly the same job as what was getting done on CDEP, but they're not getting paid to do that job. It is slave labour.
It is. It makes me not want to, if I so, as a black fella, wanted to go out to remote or regional Australia. This actually puts me off going to work in a community under these conditions. Why would I go and put myself under these conditions, eh?
That's right. That's exactly right. They talk about it being an initiative to keep people within the working program, but what it's doing is providing a pool of slave labour for profit businesses. It's also keeping people entrenched in this extreme poverty within their communities. And they're feeling like there is no alternative. It's either I've got to work in these conditions that are harming myself and my community, or I go 8 weeks with no money, which is extra pressure on the poorer community, because you know our mob. They stick together, so then there's pressure on the broader community to feed and care for a person that's just been breached for 8 weeks.
I think it's very sad hearing here that we're still seeing a form of indentured labour, if you like, because historically, as you know, as blackfellas, that's what our grannies and grandparents were forced to do, yeah? Whether we're
exactly.
cutting the cane or working on the boats. Yeah, so sad.
It's work
we haven't
for
really
rations,
come that
isn't it?
Far. Well, that's right. That's how my grandparents would work for flour, tea, and they on the mission they used to give my grannies dog bones, but they'd just give the bones to the dogs.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I spent almost 10 years here in Queensland working on the stolen wages campaign.
Oh, bless
you. Government.
You know my mum then. You know China Hegarty.
I know Hegarty's are meant to be related to us.
Oh, well, you're my sister.
That's right.
Yeah, my mum's Pam. Pam Hegarty. She was on the...
I know Pam,
yeah. On the task force, my mum, yeah.
Darling, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's me.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, mum's up in Maningrida at the moment working. Which has got me worried now with all this CDP stuff, but I'll just have to check in and make sure. I'm sure she's right. Yeah, she's a smart one. Aye.
Yeah. Oh, it's appalling. We've seen...
It really is, yeah.
You know, the fact that people are having to actually toss up between receiving money for 8 weeks or risking their life on machinery because they don't have the appropriate safety wear. You know, that having those that's the only two options. Like, it's inconceivable, really.
It is.
You know, we hear from people that have medical issues, and for them to not participate in an activity for a medical reason, they've got to go to a Centrelink-approved doctor. You know, they can travel up to 3 days, as I mentioned before, to see that doctor, and then they get back to their community and the job service provider is saying, no, that's not acceptable. You know, people that are actually doing wage jobs. That's what gets me so much. You know, there are jobs within remote communities that people can be doing, and they should be done for those award conditions and have employment conditions as part of that work as well. It really is just a scary environment within these remote communities with what's being subjected upon them.
It really is. Is there any hope or any light into the future that things may get better, Lara? I guess that's the good work you're doing with your organisation, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that's sort of happening. First Nation Workers Alliance, you know, we work with CDP workers in remote communities around delivering training and skills that assist them in campaigning around this issue. And the whole idea about, we're not going to go out there and do for you. It's about actually what skills, what training, what is it that you need to be able to put up a fight around this campaign? Because we're thinking, you know, remote communities are always subject to policies and programs that can be quite harmful to their community. So we wanted to deliver training that would help communities, not just on this issue, but potentially future issues that may be arise. We're also running an education and awareness program around this. So we're talking more broadly to non-Indigenous communities, and we hold conferences, and people are absolutely appalled. They're disgraced that this is still happening, and they're really quite upset that this isn't being reported in mainstream media either, because it is extremely unjust and inhumane with what's happening around this program. There's a legal avenue where we're looking at the legalities of CDP. You know, there's a lot happening in this space. We've got the Northern Territory Peak Aboriginal Organisations have come up with an alternative model. So if CDP stopped today, this program could be implemented tomorrow that's delivering wages to workers. And we know it's not a cost thing because we've done the breakdown. So for every dollar a CDP worker receives, it costs government 70 cents to administer. So that's something like $365 million a year they're spending on this program that could be better invested in job creation in remote communities.
Most certainly. Lara Watson, we might have to leave it there for today, but we'd love to keep in touch with you, eh? With what you
No doing. Worries, sounds good. Yeah.
Keep up the amazing work. Yeah.
Thank you. Doing a great job. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us on May Day. Yeah.
Thank you. All right.
We'll talk soon. We'll get you on the show again very soon just to check in with your campaigns and what's happening. Yeah.
Great.
All right. Thanks so much, sis. Take care. See you then. Bye. Right here on 3CR Radical Radio. That's a lovely Lara Watson from the First Nations Workers Alliance. And as you heard there, our CDP is in quite a state of affairs right around Australia. Good to hear that. The First Nations Workers Alliance mob, Lara Watson, who also works with my mum. There you go. Everyone knows my mum. I look out. Right here on 3CR Radical Radio. Smack bang right on 11:30. Little pinch and a punch. Murray style. Talking about punching, we've got a champion boxer coming up next, but he's not here to talk about boxing. We're going to get him on to talk about his role and work in the Plumbers Union across Victorian Aboriginal communities and also over in WA and up in the Northern Territory as well. I reckon we'll get him on. We'll play a track and then we'll get Mr. Robbie Pitten on the radio right here on May Day where you're listening to Us Mob on 855 AM today for May Day. We're talking all about workers' rights today. And one particular area we're going to talk about coming up next is plumbing. Joining me from the Plumbers Union is the manager of the Indigenous program, Robbie Pitten.
How's things, all right?
Yeah, good, bros. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the show, eh?
All good, darling. Yeah, mate, I'm always ready and willing to have a crack, you know?
Yeah, have a crack. And we're not talking boxing, are we? We're talking plumbing.
No. Have a crack. Create an opportunity for our young mob, you know? That's what I'm about. So, like, obviously, obviously the construction industry is a very big industry that we need to infiltrate, and we're slowly doing that. So it's pretty good.
And what's your role? What's your job, Robbie? What do you do there?
I'm actually the group training officer, so I look after 30 apprentices. 80% of our company is Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, so we also employ 90 people that give us the capability to do the big work. So we've got the level crossing project with 175 people out there. We've got the metro tunnel coming up, which is an $11 billion job. That's coming up. We'll have the 300 workers out there, and we've got another
11 billion. I just heard 11 billion. Hey,
$11 billion job. So the managing director, Christian Gaylard, him, myself, and Alan Jones started this company about 2.5 years ago. We started creating the opportunity, create the company just to make give Aboriginal people opportunities and the leg up to get into the construction industry. One of the things Christian says, and it kind of blew me away when he said it. He said Aboriginal people get paid the most, he said they go to the biggest jobs and get paid the best money in Victoria. So, to hear a non-Indigenous man say that, it kind of blew me away when he said that. It's seeing that he's half in the right place. So, it's all good, yeah?
That's lovely, Robbie. And have we got lots of young apprentices coming through in this area in plumbing, mate?
Yes, plumbing and carpentry. I was just there to see if new trade centres just said. I was just down there in Port Melbourne. So, I've got about 30 apprentices and, 25 of them are Aboriginal. So Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander. So we try to make sure that we pick kids that want to be plumbers. That a kid who wants to be a plumber, wants to be a plumber, then it's pretty easy to keep him in the job. I don't just put any person into the job, and just a number. I make sure the guys want to do it, so it makes it easier for me to keep them employed.
And what else does your role involve there? You sound pretty busy, Bruz.
Meetings with government. Meeting with government, procurement. Just meetings with CEOs of different companies, just trying to create opportunities, just to make sure that we dot the I's and cross the T's and put the right people out there, so we make all the brother boys and brother sisters and the sisters look deadly. So it's always good.
Yeah. All right, Robbie. Thanks for joining us on May Day. We know we're going to let you go because you're busy, eh?
Always busy, darling. Always never busy enough. But I can always find a little more work, So
That's it. Well, we'd love to keep in touch, and you get in touch with us, Mob, anytime you want to talk about anything or get the message out there. We'd be happy to have you on, Robbie.
Thank you very much, darling. You have a good day, and happy May Day.
Yeah, happy May Day, Robbie. Take care, Bruce. See you, my brother. Bye now. Oh, that's a lovely Robbie Pedden. He's my Murray brother. That's right. We're Queenslanders. He's down here doing very good work in the community, in his role, of course, as the manager of the Indigenous program at the Plumbers Union, also known as the PPTEU. There you go. Black Noise Radio on your air now. We're going to go to a special piece of audio in just a moment. In fact, we might head to that right after this.
You're listening to 3CR Radio.
You most certainly are. Thank you, Lady Lash. You know, there's a Lady Lash documentary coming out. She's been filming over on country in South Australia, and she got crowdfunding for that, which I just admire so much, these young ones who get off their mums and just take action out there in community. Gotta love it. Right here on 3CR Radical Radio, 855 AM. Well, it's all about May Day today. It's all about workers' rights. So we've got a very special piece of audio to bring to you. I've got a little bit of a connection to this Wave Hill mob. I lived once at the Catherine Caravan Park, as you do as a teenager when your parents drag you off on a working holiday to the Northern Territory. And it was actually the the station manager from Wave Hill, once he left Wave Hill, this fella came and managed the Catherine Caravan Park. There you go. There you go. So today we're here on 3CR Radical Radio. For you now, we're going to hear some very special audio from the 50th anniversary of the Gurindji Walk-Off at Wave Hill, Gurindji Elder Michael George.
Gather round, people. I'll tell you a story, an 8-year-long story of power and pride. British Lord Vesey, Vincent Lingyari.
They picked up their swags, started off walking at Waddy Creek.
You're on Stick Together with Annie McLaughlin, and we've been listening to Kev Carmody and Paul Kelly singing the song of the Wave Hill Walk-Off. At the time of the walk-off, Wave Hill Station had been owned by British Lord Vesey's family since 1914. The Gurindji Walk-Off was initiated by Gurindji Malgunin leader Vincent Lingyari on the 23rd of August 1966 and lasted till 1974, an event which lit the fire that became the National Land Rights Movement. This is the 50th anniversary of the event, and there are anniversary celebrations going on there from August 19th to the 21st. I spoke to Michael George, Gurindji Elder, and Phil Smith, the CEO of the Gurindji Aboriginal Corporation, about the importance of the walk-off and the upcoming events.
My name is Michael George, Gurindji person. It's my country, and I've been living here all of my life.
You were there when they walked off?
I was about 10 years old. From Kinbarak.
Can you tell me about what happened?
What happened was Vincent wasn't there at Kinbarak. He was at hospital. And when he went to Darwin Hospital, there used to be an old hospital. And when he went to that old hospital, and one of the union person went up there to talk to him, see him, and he said to Vincent, "What, how they treat you at Kinbarak?" And Vincent turned around and say, "Rubbish. They treat us like a dog. No good accommodation, no good education, no good medicine and all that, and no good house. We was all living in Ampi, and they give us this Russian, a little bit of Russian tobacco, a little bit of flour, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of tea. That's it. And bit of rubbish meat from the bullock. Good meat was for all the manager and all them others, for the white fellas." That's what Vincent was saying to that union bloke, and Vincent talked to union, and when I get back to Kinbarak, this Wayville station, I got to strike all my people because they treat us like a dog. That's what he said.
And did that mean that he knew that he would get support, you guys would get support from outside the place, or was it just that what the people did that counted?
It's what the people did in Kinbarak. And we get support from the union later. This was Vincent Lingyari's idea, was to walk people off from Kinbarak because they treat us like a dog. That's why he didn't like it.
So it was everybody, wasn't it? It was the people in the house as well as the stockmen?
Yeah, everybody. We were there by nearly four tribes. And there was two suburbs, like one is eastern side, other one is western side. And we didn't have no shower, we didn't have no toilet. We just went up to the, when I was little, 11 years old, when I seen all my people, my tribe just went to the bush. You know, they didn't treat us really good. Good toilet, good shower, cold water, you know.
Where did everybody meet? You know, when Vincent came back and talked to people, do you remember seeing them talk?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I did it. when he got back from Darwin, and he just went back to post camp, eastern side and western side, he's gathered all the people, Kurundji people, mixed Walbi, Kurundji, Mulligan, a lot of people, and he's, we all was gathered up, and I seated, and they was talking, and other people, they all support Vincent. And they would say, yeah, let's get out of this place. They treat us like a dog. That's why we all, from kids to elders, to old people, to pensioners and ladies, always all together support Vincent, and we all, they all say, yeah, let's go, get out of festies. They treat us like a dog. That's why we all just gather up and we'll just walk down.
Yeah, but you made camp somewhere else, didn't you?
Now we camp at the police hall, they call that police hall. We just walk and pass through during the hot weather, hot heat. We just walking at the back shore, we'll play in front of the fence.
And what did the employers do? What did they say? And what, and did they follow you down there and say, you know, come back, come back?
No, we was, when we get to that old larger matter, we was all panicking, you know, and looking back, because that's the people that they do made it, you know, they can shoot people, you know, we was looking back from that where the larger matter road, you know.
Hmm.
And Finchin was saying, ah, just keep going, don't worry about them. We got spears, everything here. But nothing, we didn't see anyone behind us, follow us on the fence line.
So,
it was really good, you know.
So you were frightened. You were frightened for your lives, were you?
Yeah, we were frightened from the festies.
Hmm. Goodness.
We were frightened from the festies.
Hmm.
There was bad people from England, you know.
Hmm.
Yeah, people you leave will shoot, you know.
Hmm.
But nothing, they didn't mean it. That is, I think they just didn't just frighten people up.
First off, it was about, you know, treat us properly, but then it was about, we want some land of our own. You know, we want our land back.
Yeah, that's right. See, that's why Finchin took us all from Jin Barracks, because they treat us like a dog. And when we got 2 years, now we got our own land and we got everything here in this community. We got our own corporation, we got everything. Good corporation, good education, good health. Everything we got. Shop. And now we stand up for our right. Finchin was saying that, you know. Keep fight for your right.
He was a great man. He was a great man, wasn't he?
He was a great man. He was a real, very great man. We was good people, no matter what tribe, we was proud of him.
What made him so strong?
Made him so strong because he was sorry about his people. Because white people been treated like a dog up there. He better get to Waverley Station. And that's why I didn't like it. He didn't go to school. He didn't know the English, but he just been taught for his right to get Aboriginal people out of besties.
You know, you said that the union fellow spoke to him. One of the things that Vincent did was take the message to other states. He went other places in this country, and he talked about this. This made a big difference, didn't it?
Yeah, he made a big difference, right? You know, everyone just looked silly, you know. We just get all of a sudden. It was real hard thing, you know, for him. It was real hard thing for him. So we had union, the artists, fellow Finchin, and we all get together at where the police hall is, where we all gather up, sleep, camp at the riverbank, and they all can say union was good helper, you know. And they still support today. We still gotta help from them today.
You're going to have a big festival, aren't you, to celebrate
50 years Freedom Day, that anniversary. Every after 5 years, we always have that anniversary. And that's how we celebrate for our people, not only for us. For the elders, when they die, who have been passed away, we still keep the memory for them. That's why we keep having the Freedom Day every year. From little one to big one.
Can other people come and celebrate with you?
They can come. They all can come in, you know, like minister and all that other land council or other sponsors, all that, you know, they can come in for that 50 years anniversary. It'll be a big one, this one for everyone. For all of us. All of us in the Northern Territory, in Australia. because Simpson didn't break the record for all Aboriginal people.
Right here on 3CR Radical Radio, Michael George there, Gurindji Elder, speaking with Annie from 3CR on the Gurindji walk-off at Wave Hill. Great piece of audio there. Thanks to the mob here at 3CR for making that audio happen. Right now, I'm going to leave you with a track. We're at the end of our May Day broadcast. Thank you to everyone.
Who survives this legacy?